Hi there, good morning. Once again, for the newbies, my name is Amrit. I'm from Phoenix. I'm going to moderate the session, How to Avoid Malpractice Claims. Our speaker is Dr. John Scott, and I'm going to hand it over to Dr. Scott. Thank you.
Well, we're learning as the day goes by here. A minute ago, I tried to walk across the room with this and had forgotten that it's not cordless. So it became that way. I think I'm maybe ready to go here. For those of you techies out there, if you like computers, this is the greatest little thing in the world. This is actually a mouse that senses the movement of your hand. If you can see that mouse there, I can move it from over here. And then when you let go, and I use it mostly just to click and change slides, but try to get you out of the way. I'm John Scott. I'm a lawyer. I'm a veterinarian. For those of you who haven't been here before, we go through all this every time. I represent plaintiffs in medical malpractice cases, suing physicians, but I don't sue veterinarians. I practice 2 days a week in a regular veterinary practice, work 8 to 10 shifts a month at our local veterinary emergency clinic. So I still try to stay fairly active in veterinary medicine in spite of having gone to law school. This session we're going to be talking about how to avoid malpractice claims. Veterinarians often ask me, what can I do to keep from getting sued? The typical answer from a lawyer is nothing. If anyone wants to sue you, they're going to. All it takes is a filing fee, and you don't even have to have a lawyer, but most people do get a lawyer if they can get one to agree to take the case. And even if you don't have the money for the filing fee, most jurisdictions have what's called a pauper's affidavit, that you just sign a piece of paper saying you can't afford the filing fee, and they let you file the case anyway. That's the truth, but it's not really the whole truth. There are a lot of things that you can do to decrease the likelihood of being sued. And in this session, we're not going to talk about what to do to win the lawsuit. This is things to try and keep people from suing you in the first place and just not getting involved in that situation. This afternoon, we're going to talk about medical records for 2 hours. It's going to be a lot like a presentation I gave 2 years ago at this meeting, except we've expanded it a little more time for questions, and we're also, if the copy machine doesn't burn out, we're going to have some copies of some records, and we'll do a little workshop where you'll look at some records that I have gotten from some of my close friends, and we'll examine those, and I probably won't tell you who they are because I like most of them. But we'll go through some records and look at good and bad things. So probably of all the things that I can recommend for any veterinary practice to do regarding legal issues, medical records are probably the biggest thing that I see if I go into practices and look for things that they can change. The medical records are probably the main thing. So very few practices are doing it the way it really needs to be done. A lot of them are pretty adequate. Some of them are really asking for trouble. So if you can, try and come back for those sessions. All the other sessions are going to be on diarrhea, which you already know how to take care of, and neurology, which no one understands anyway. So come on back for those sessions. I have a little personal experience in this area because, like I say, I represent plaintiffs in medical malpractice cases. I've been doing that for about the last 15 years. People contact me when they think they've been harmed by their doctor and they're wanting to explore the possibility of a lawsuit. And I've gotten some insights from those conversations of why people sue their doctor or they don't when things go wrong. And so we're going to apply some of those insights to veterinary malpractice issues. And we won't talk a lot about board grievances, but things that protect you from lawsuits tend to protect you from board grievances as well. And in some cases, your risk of a board action is much greater than your risk of a lawsuit. So you want to protect yourself from both. The first thing is to maintain competence. There just is absolutely no substitute for medical competence. If you're not practicing good veterinary medicine, all the goodwill and everything else in the world is just not going to be enough. If you screw up bad enough, it's just going to be real hard to cover it up. They're going to know about it. They're going to, if they think it's worthwhile, they're going to take action on it. Attend conferences like this. Read as much as you can. Try and stay current. For those of us who have been out of practice, out of law school or vet school for 30 years, it's hard to stay current with a lot of things. And so you just got to keep reading. You want to concentrate on the things that you do in your practice. If you don't do any orthopedic surgery, it's probably not real important that you keep up with that. But you certainly want to keep up with all the new information that's coming out about vaccination protocols, sarcomas from vaccinations. Decide what you're going to do about that. There's a lot of options, and a lot of people will tell you what's right and wrong. And when more than one person tells you more than one different thing, you know there's not right and wrong, but there's a lot of opinions. And so you need to figure out what you're going to do about a lot of those things, and you can't decide if you don't have the information. Also, though, don't neglect the areas that are difficult or uninteresting. Every time I come to a meeting like this, I try to go to at least one meeting on neurology. That, for me, is a difficult area. And so I try to go to at least one meeting, because if it's up to me, you know, if I'm thumbing through a journal and there's a neurology article, just as likely that article's not going to get read. So I try to concentrate on the things that aren't that much fun to me. Talk to your colleagues. Obviously, that's one of the best ways to know what's going on. New discoveries, new treatments. Just like in human medicine, veterinary medicine changes. 20 years ago, you drank milk for peptic ulcers. Now you take antibiotics. Total change in the way that that ulcers are treated in people. We've had that same experience in veterinary medicine. When I was in vet school, we were undergoing the change in how you treat shock. You don't close down all of those peripheral vessels. You open them up, but then you pump a bunch of fluids in them to fill those vessels that you're opening up. It was a 180-degree change from what we thought before that. And those things happen, so you just got to keep up. You can have, if your area is big enough, and it doesn't have to be real big, to have a monthly get-together every 2 months, whether you have a local association or not. Get together with your local veterinarians and have lunch. Bring that case that's bothering you. Bring the lab work and have everybody else look at it. Bring the x-rays, and everybody else in the restaurant will be impressed anyway. So go through all of those things. Try and hold down the conversation when you're talking about the things that are going to bother other people's lunches. Doesn't bother our lunch, but realize that some people don't like to hear about diarrhea at lunch. Not necessarily. If you have a local association and your state allows you CE, credit for attendance at those, sure. And, you know, just to be able to say, I'm doing this to keep up, I don't know. It wouldn't hurt anything. But I don't know if it would help a whole lot as far as a lawsuit is concerned. Mostly you're just concerned in learning what you can. Keep good records. And like I say, we're going to have 2 hours on this this afternoon. Everyone knows they're essential to winning a law practice suit, but a malpractice lawsuit, but they're also important for preventing one. If you keep good records, it forces you to practice good medicine. And we'll talk about the SOAP method of records that probably you all are familiar with. When you write S on that record for the history, it forces you to get it down there. And it reminds you, you've got to get a good history. There is no substitute for getting a good history in an animal that's sick. And if you're keeping good records, it will force you more to get that history so that you've got it. It'll make you do a complete physical, because if you're going to write on there that the heart's fine, the lungs are good, the color's good, the perfusion's good, you got to check it to be able to write it on the record, hopefully. So it helps you, it forces you to do a physical. If you're going to write down under your assessment what you think the problem is, a possible diagnosis, you got to think of that. And so keeping records actually makes you go through the mental process that you ought to be going through in the first place, that makes you practice good medicine, which helps you keep from getting sued. 2 o'clock this afternoon, we're starting that. Be nice. Again, with being competent, being nice goes a long, long ways to keep from getting sued. Do your best to stay cool when you can. expect that your client is going to wait until the end of your vaccination appointment to tell you that her dog's had bloody diarrhea for 3 days. And then you get to start all over again. And you may have decided, well, you probably wouldn't have vaccinated it if she had told you that. But those things are going to happen, and you've got to stay cool when it does. Expect that 5 minutes before lunch, you're going to have a dog come in that's been hit by a car, then attacked by the neighbor's dog. And, oh, by the way, there's also a puppy hanging out. Those things will challenge your ability to be nice. But those are the times when you need to try to stay as cool as you can and just take things as they come. Expect that your only surgical tech is going to call in sick on the day you've scheduled a tibial plateau leveling procedure. And you really need that tech. And they call you and say, oops, I'm not going to be here. My kid's sick. Every malpractice attorney has seen clients that want to sue the hospital. They want to sue the ambulance company. They want to sue three of the doctors that treated them while they were in the hospital. But there's one doctor that they don't want to sue. And it may be the doctor that really is most culpable for the problem that they're having, but they don't want to sue him because he's just really nice or she's very kind. And I hear that over and over and over again. Don't underestimate how much a client will overlook from a person who they really like. Practice informed consent. We had a topic on this morning at 8:30 for those of you who got up early enough. Avoid surprises. Don't tell the client about possible drug reactions and surgical complications or expensive fees after the fact. Do all of that ahead of time. Let them know what the risks are. Let them know what the costs are going to be. If you put them on Remedil, let them know that there can be problems. When you vaccinate them, you don't have to go into a big, long spiel, but tell them that it's possible to have vaccine reactions. If they have any questions, be sure and call you, come back, whatever they need to do. Just, if you can cover a lot of that ahead of time, it makes a huge difference. The basics of informed consent, the hour distilled down into a minute, is that you tell the client of all the material risks, the costs, the alternative procedures of what you're going to be doing, and then you always ask them, do you have any more questions? And if you will answer all their questions, then there is a good chance that there's not going to be problems come up later when things go wrong, because you've told them the possibility that things could go wrong. When Ms. Johnson has a dog dying of liver failure, and you prescribed Rimadyl or some other NSAID therapy, and you didn't warn of the possible complications, she gets on the internet and she finds out that those drugs can cause liver failure. Now she assumes that you didn't tell her about that possibility because you were afraid she wouldn't buy the medication if you told her about it. And they will ascribe a financial reason for you doing that, and that you're just trying to sell more drugs. That happens a lot more often than you think. What she probably doesn't realize is if you had told her of those risks ahead of time, she probably still would have gone ahead and gotten that medication, but she would have known that those risks were there. As it is, if you didn't tell her about it, they will often ascribe an evil motive to what was fairly innocent on your part. All she knows in this situation, your greed's killing her baby, and so she's going to sue you for it. Express regret and offer to fix it. You know there's two kinds of coaches, those that have been fired, those that will be fired. There's two kinds of veterinarians, those that have made a bad mistake and those that are going to make a bad mistake. It happens to all of us. If you practice long enough, you're going to do it. You may squeeze too hard on the bladder of an obstructed cat and rupture the bladder. You might, when you're given barium by a stomach tube, forget to apply negative pressure when you're pulling that tube out of there that is released into the back of the dog's throat, just what's in the tube, and he inhales that. We had that happen in our practice a couple of 3 months ago. The doctor that did it is not a board-certified surgeon or veterinarian, but he's eligible for board certification. He's the best veterinarian I've ever worked with, and still it happened to him. And that dog starts breathing funny, and you take an x-ray, and you pop it up there, and you see that whole bronchial tree outlined in white. It's really a surprise. It's a shock. And at that point, though, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. Those things happen to all of us. This is a controversial subject because the insurance companies will tell you never say anything that might be construed as an admission of guilt. Tell them, excuse me, it's just a complication. Doesn't matter how bad you screwed up or whether it was just a recognized complication. Just don't say anything. But I have seen a lot of clients that tell me, I would not be here talking to you as a lawyer today if my doctor had just said, I'm so sorry that happened, and we're going to fix it. We're going to do whatever it takes to try and make it right. They wouldn't be suing. There's a basic conflict there, and I can't tell you for sure which is right. I just know from my personal experience that what people tell me when they come to me to see if I think they ought to sue their doctor, many of them tell me if they had just apologized and said they were going to make it right, I wouldn't be here talking to you today. Some of that's going to depend on the relationship you have with the client, whether it's a first-time client, somebody coming to you for the last 20 years. The obviousness of the mistake, if you know it just obviously was something that should not have happened, those are the ones that I would be trying to make right as fast as I can. And I wouldn't, in some of those, I wouldn't hesitate to say, this is my fault. I screwed up. I'm really sorry. I'm going to fix it. It's going to be that obvious when you get to trial anyway, if they do go ahead and sue you. So I don't think it hurts to go ahead and say right up front, this was my fault, and I'm going to try to fix it. It may cost you some money up front. It's not going to cost you near as much as a lawsuit. The severity of the damage to the animal, again, if it's a problem you can fix for $40, do it and don't charge them. If it's going to be something that's going to take $5,000 of medical treatment, you're going to have to send it to a surgeon, to a specialty practice or a veterinary school or something like that. That may be a little different. It would make a difference if it was just a pet dog a show dog, a breeding dog, a million-dollar horse. Those are all things that you want to take into consideration. But it's something to consider, the value of the animal. Let's look at a couple of occurrences. You spayed a dog. It comes back. There's some fat coming out of there. Hopefully that's all. Hopefully it's not to the stage of intestines yet. You go back in to fix it, and you find that the knots are all untied. That's probably your fault. You didn't tie them right. I did one the other day. The knots didn't come untied. Everything was still there. Those sutures had to be less than a quarter of an inch apart on a 40-pound dog, and there was fat coming between every one of those sutures. Some of those things you just can't control. You know, I have never had that happen before, but it happened on that one, and so we fixed it. The wrong response in many of these is just tell them, well, you know, these things sometimes happen. They're not perfect. They're animals. They're not machines. This is a recognized complication of the procedure. Again, the informed consent might have helped you out here. What you want to think about is saying, I don't think I did anything wrong. I'm sorry there was a problem. I'm not going to charge you for the second surgery. I'm not going to charge you for the antibiotics. I'm not going to charge you for the stay in the hospital. That's going to cost you maybe $150 at the outside for your anesthetic costs, tech time, everything like that. Out of pocket, it's not going to cost you a whole lot. Compared to a lawsuit, it's a real bargain. Eat that probably $50 instead of $150. Fix it. They're going to think you're the most wonderful person in the world for taking care of the problem and not charging you for it. From your ego standpoint, it's probably not the thing to do. From a legal standpoint, certainly something you want to think about. Because when you weigh that against a lawsuit, you're better off going this way. Flea infestation. Animal was in your clinic for 2 weeks. Maybe you spayed them while they were there, and you boarded if you board. They take the animal home, and then they call back and they say, my dog's covered in fleas, and they got it at your hospital. So what do? You tell them, well, your carpet probably was infested with the fleas, and they all hatched when you came back into the house and with the dog, and the vibration makes them all hatch out, and the warm animal coming in makes them all hatch out, and that's what happened. Well, it probably is what happened, but if you tell them that, they're not going to feel real good about your response. Think about, and I say this is the correct response, again, these are possibilities. Think about something more like, we haven't had any other reports of flea problems, and I'm really sorry this happened. We're going to dip your dog for fleas. We're going to give him a free treatment with Frontline. You and I are going to look at him before he goes home and make sure he doesn't have any fleas. And I don't think it was our fault, but in case it was, we're going to fix it. What's that going to cost you? With tech time, the dip, the Frontline, $30, $40. Pretty cheap to keep from getting sued if they want to. They're probably not going to sue you for fleas, but it's going to cause some real bad feelings. And we'll get to that in a minute. A dog dies during a spay. You know you dropped the artery. You couldn't find it in time, and the dog bled out. Doesn't happen very often. Luckily, it hadn't happened to me yet, but it may. It's happened to a lot of veterinarians. Or someone was inattentive. They didn't watch. The dog was getting light. You turned the isoflurane up to 4 to get it back down. You got busy doing other things. You never did get back and turn that isoflurane back down again. And the dog died. These are things that are obviously your fault. Telling them those things just happened, he had an allergic reaction to the anesthetic. That's our basic response. Well, it wasn't an allergic reaction. It was a mistake. It was malpractice. Think about telling them, this is very unusual. I'm really sorry for the outcome. You don't even have to say it's your fault. You can if you want to. But offer to buy them another dog. Do the initial series of vaccines at no charge. What's that going to cost you? $500, $600? Again, weigh that against a lawsuit. We talked about now you can't get non-economic damages, but in the future you may be able to. That may be a $25,000, $50,000 lawsuit. If you can head that off with $500, that may be in your best interest to do that. Check with your liability carrier, though, before you get involved in anything like that that's going to run any money into any money if they do bring a lawsuit. And the things we've talked about doing, do that only if you're willing to pay for it out of your pocket and not expect the insurance company to pay for it. Because once you get them involved, then they may be talking like we've talked about, well, what did you tell them? Did you tell them you were wrong? Well, what kind of told them I might have been. And on some of those things, the insurance company is not going to be real happy. Again, there's that conflict, and I don't know that there's any easy answer as to how to get out of that. Do it only if you're comfortable doing it. The fact that I think it's a good idea doesn't make it right. You do what you think is good. If you're insincere, you're trying to lie your way out of a bad situation, many of your clients, most of them, are going to sense that, and they're going to know, and that's just going to increase their being upset with you. This is what I started to say something about a minute ago. The thing with the fleas, they're probably not going to sue you over the fleas, but if you give that dog a flea bath, give it a frontline treatment, tell them, you know, we want to do what's right in this case. A lot of people who sue you are not necessarily suing you for what happened last week. They're suing you for what happened 2 years ago when they had that flea problem and they brought the dog back and had it dipped and you charged them $50 for the dip and you sold them $40 worth of front line and you charged them an office call besides that. They're still thinking about that 2 years later. And what's happened last week wouldn't have been such a big deal if they weren't harboring that from some time ago. And it's all keeping good client relations. And that's why I say that $40 to dip that dog and give it a frontline treatment may help you farther down the line when you have another problem with that client. You don't have to roll over, though, and just give in to every complaint. Again, that's up to you how much you want to do. And I don't recommend that every time there's a problem, you try and settle it with money. Sometimes you will get that reputation. And if you've done it once for people, they're going to ask again. And if you do it three times for them, they're going to expect it. And there has to be an end to that. Where it is what I can't tell you. But you want to think along those lines of don't necessarily be a real obstinate like the insurance companies sometimes tell you. You want to weigh the cost versus the expected goodwill. If you didn't do anything wrong and the stakes are high, by all means, defend yourself. You know, if you didn't do anything wrong and the animal died and it was an expensive show dog and you know they're going to sue you and you know they're going to ask for a lot of money, stand your ground. You didn't do anything wrong. Don't necessarily try to buy them off just to try and get away from the lawsuit. For your own peace of mind, for your own self-worth, go ahead and defend that and let the insurance company take care of it. We just said, although I've listed wrong and correct, they're not necessarily that way. Do what you think. But I'll also don't think the insurance carrier is also right. At a meeting a couple of years ago, I was talking to a representative from a carrier that represents veterinarians. It wasn't the AVMA PLIT. It was another carrier. And he said they had started instituting a dead dog policy that almost any dog that died under treatment in a veterinary clinic that was insured by them, they would immediately offer to replace that dog. No questions asked. We're not going to worry about who was right, who was wrong, whether it was malpractice, whether it was an accident, what happened. We're going to replace your dog. For the insurance company, from an economic standpoint, that is not a bad deal, particularly when we don't yet have non-economic damages. Because the most they're going to get if they go to trial is the value of the animal, maybe some veterinary bills and that sort of thing. So that insurance company has started instituting that as a way of heading off lawsuits, of saying, we'll spend $500 on this. We can't hire a lawyer to review the case for $500. Let's put it into goodwill with the client. And I don't know whether that's going to be a coming trend or whether it's just going to stay with that one insurance company or whether 10 years from now they're not going to do that anymore. But they're experimenting with that. Okay, use the telephone. When people call you, return calls. Lawyers are the worst in the world about that. And veterinarians are kind of just as bad. So you've got to, when people are expecting you to call, be sure and do it. If my voice makes it through the day, we're going to be lucky. You want to be sure and come to these afternoon sessions, though, because as much water as I'm drinking, you'll want to enjoy the show this afternoon while I'm standing up here like this trying to get through the hour. Clients think if you're too busy to return their calls, you're too busy to give their animals good treatment. And that may be true. If it's just because you don't want to call them, that's one thing. Report lab results. Give progress reports on animals in the hospital. If they've got an animal there and they haven't heard from you in 2 days, they're wondering what's going on. You've got to call people at least once a day and maybe even morning and evening. If you're doing diagnostic work, imaging, lab work, as soon as you've got any kind of results, call them and tell them. It may not mean anything right then. It may not change your treatment. It may just be one step in the diagnostic procedure. Call them, tell them what's going on. You don't have to do it. If you've got a tech that's very knowledgeable, have the tech call them. But just stay in touch with people. Failure to communicate bad news quickly raises suspicions of wrongdoing. We talked about earlier, people will ascribe evil motives to things that were not necessarily evil. If you are not communicating with them, they're going to assume the worst. They're going to assume you found something bad that you don't want to tell them about. They'll assume that you've done something wrong and you're trying to get it fixed before you do call them. They will think the worst. So if you're calling them on a regular basis and communicating with them, even if it's bad news, call them and let them know what's going on, and that will save a lot of problems. Hire good staff. Train them well. If you have newer, inexperienced staff, they can't find records. They quote incorrect prices. They give incorrect protocols for vaccines. They give wrong answers to common questions. We've all spent time correcting wrong information given by a new staff member that thinks they're a junior veterinarian. And half the people you hire fall into that category. They want to communicate with the clients. They want to show the clients how much they know. And they go across the line and they tell them things that aren't true. That's at least been my experience, and I assume it's common. Anytime there's confusion, it gives the impression of incompetence. So if your tech tells them one thing, and then you have to back up and try to correct that, it makes them wonder, well, what else have I been told that wasn't right? The flea medication that the tech gave me and told me how to give it and how it would work, was that information correct? Because this other information wasn't. And again, it's that ascribing evil motives when there aren't any there. But anytime there's confusion, they're going to think someone doesn't know what they're doing. They may be right. You've got to teach your tech staff to say, I don't know. They don't know everything. They're not expected to know everything. And it doesn't hurt to say they don't know everything. But a lot of them cannot bring themselves to say, I don't know. They'll make up answers. They'll give answers from something they've seen on the internet. They'll give answers from something somebody told them, their aunt or their grandmother, 10 years ago. and it's not accurate. So you've got to tell them, unless it's something I've told you or it's something you've heard me tell 40 clients, don't tell people that. If they ask you a question and you can't answer it, simply say, I don't know, but I'll find the answer for you. We'll have the doctor talk to you. I'll have another tech come in and talk to you that knows the answer. But making up answers will really come back and bite you. If you have a high staff turnover rate, fix it. If you've got a high turnover rate, there's got to be a reason for it. It may be low pay. It may be poor working conditions. It may be overbearing veterinarians, overbearing staff members, practice managers, whatever. Whatever the problem is, if you've got a high turnover rate, you need to find out why and you need to fix it. It may be raising salaries. It may be getting rid of that person that's overbearing or getting them to change their attitude. But when you've got that high turnover rate, you've always got people there that don't know what they're doing, and they're going to be giving bad information to your clients, and then you're going to have to try and straighten it all out, and it gives that impression of incompetence that we've talked about. Keep it clean. Have a cleaning schedule and enforce it. Whatever you think works for your clinic. If it's sweeping four times a day and mopping once a day, whatever. If someone comes in on Sunday afternoon and makes sure they clean everything, all of the shelves, take the medications off the shelves, wipe them clean in the exam rooms, whatever it takes to keep it clean, that's what you need to do. Clean up messes quickly. When that dog urinates on the floor or on the side of your cabinet, whatever it is, clean it up. The next person that walks in is not going to necessarily know how long that's been there. The person who's in your waiting room for a half an hour and sees it there the whole time and it hadn't been cleaned up is going to know how long it's been there. So you got to clean those things up quickly. Dirty floors, bad odors, they give the impression that cleanliness is a low priority, and it probably is. Sloppy cleaning gives the impression of sloppy medical care. There may be absolutely no connection whatever. You may just be a slob, and you don't care whether the place is clean or not, and you give the highest quality medical care that's available. The clients won't see it that way. They'll think if you're sloppy in one area, you're sloppy in every other area too. Clean, attractive facilities instill confidence. That may not be right, but it's the way it is. Same way with professional image. While you're cleaning up your clinic, clean up your staff and your veterinarians. The thing that irritates me most is to go into a veterinary clinic and the male technicians are wearing ball caps. That may not happen in your area, but in Amarillo, it's pretty common. And that just irritates the way I was raised. I'm of the Bum Phillips camp of hats. Any of you know who Bum Phillips is? Nobody. You're not old enough or you're not interested in sports. Bum Phillips was the coach of the Houston Oilers for 6 or 8 years, maybe, something like that. Old country boy. He had a ranch and he wore boots and hats and that sort of thing. The Oilers played in the Astrodome. Bum Phillips would not wear his hat in the Astrodome because his mama had taught him, you take your hat off when you go inside. The Astrodome is inside. Bum Phillips is not going to wear his hat in the Astrodome. That's taking it a little far. But there are things like that. And you can see them. It may be the people that their belt is just about this high and their pants are falling off. And you can see their underwear above their pants for 6 inches. That may be all right for your 18 and 20 and 25-year-old clients. It's not a good deal for your 45 and 50 and 70-year-old clients. They're going to resent that, and they're not going to think that's a good deal. Professional image tells the clients what you're doing is important. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to wear a tie if you're a male. If you want to, that's good. There have been a lot of studies. There was one just a few months ago, I think, in veterinary economics, talking about the impression that wearing a white coat leaves with people, that they'll show people pictures of someone wearing a denim shirt, someone wearing a white shirt with a tie, various things. And they'll say, which of these people is the smartest? And they will invariably pick the person wearing the tie, the doctor wearing the white coat, whatever. Your practice may not be that way. I don't think there's a single veterinarian in Amarillo that wears a tie. And that's fine. That's just the way Amarillo is. But if you're in an area and your clients expect that type of thing, then I'd do that. That's pretty cheap, just to wear a tie every day, just to make sure that you don't offend your clients and that they think highly of you. Clients assume that if you don't care about your appearance, you don't care about their animal. Same thing with the cleanliness, your appearance. It may not be right, but that's the way they think. Matching uniforms are great. You don't have to, though, as long as everyone's fairly clean. That's the main thing. Show respect for your colleagues. What goes around comes around. If you don't show respect for them, you can't expect them to show respect for you. There's a lot of lawsuits and grievances that are initiated because one veterinarian criticizes another one. We have one veterinarian in Amarillo that does this all the time. Nothing we do at the emergency clinic is right. He has in his Yellow Pages ad, 24-hour service. Well, that means our emergency clinic will take care of his clients. He sometimes sees them, but most of the time he's out of town. We see one of his animals at the emergency clinic. If we do fairly minimal work, we didn't do enough. If we do very much of a workup, we did too much and we're money grubbing. Never happy. Any animal that goes to him from another veterinarian, he will tell him, if you'd had this animal here to me 3 days ago, we could have cured this without any problem. If anyone brings an animal to him that's really sick and it dies, you know, if you'd had this to me just a couple of days earlier, we could have saved this dog. That other veterinarian didn't know what they were doing. And he does that all the time. Almost every veterinarian in Amarillo has had to appear before the state board because he tells the clients that other veterinarian was a quack, they didn't know what they were doing, and so that client files a grievance with the state board, and then we have to make a trip to Austin to appear before the board. And I don't know anyone that they have found a justifiable grievance from that, but I've had to, and I know at least three or four other veterinarians that have all had grievances filed against him because of that veterinarian. You want to not be guilty of that because from a very practical standpoint, if you do very much of that, other veterinarians are going to start doing it to you. It's also just the right thing to do. Just take the high road. Generally, when people say, well, did the other veterinarian do what he ought to do? You know, I try to as much as possible say, you know, they saw this animal 3 days ago. It probably looked different then. I can't say what I would have done if I had seen the animal 3 days ago, so I certainly can't say what they did was right or wrong. It could be either way. What I see right now, this is what we need to do. And I can't worry too much about what someone else did. So it's just best not to to criticize them. When they go from one veterinarian to another, they're very quick to believe if the second veterinarian tells them that you did something wrong. And I don't know why that is, but it probably goes back to like we were talking about before. There's some reason that they didn't like your practice in the first place. And whether it was you or your techs or the cleanliness or whatever that made them move, it could just be that they moved across town. But sometimes not. But they are more apt to believe the second veterinarian than they are you. And if that veterinarian criticizes you, it may come back on you. So be nice to your other veterinarians. There's less chance that they're going to criticize you. That's it. Thanks for spending St. Patrick's Day with me. Some of you have seen that before. Some of you have not. I hope you find your pot of gold. Again, I want to tell you about the members, the American Veterinary Medical Law Association. If you're interested in legal issues, we have about 200 members of this group. We have a great newsletter. One of the students was asking me earlier, we do have a student membership. I don't remember if it's free, but it's at a greatly reduced cost. So if you know students that are interested in that, we have a website. It's avmla.org. Go there and check that out. If you're interested in legal issues, it may be something you're interested in.